What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
President Biden says the U.S. would intervene militarily if China invaded Taiwan. Plus, the World Economic Forum kicks off in Davos without snow or its typical A-listers. And we'll consider what the next phase of the war in Ukraine could look like.
If the Ukrainians did manage to get the Russians on the run, they would be very tempted to continue to chase them out as far as they could. And this is where the Western support for Ukraine might start to splinter a little bit.
It's Monday, May 23rd. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. President Biden has said the U.S. would get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if China tries to take it by force, sparking uncertainty over whether the U.S. was moving away from its longstanding policy of strategic ambiguity. Yes, that's the commitment we made, Biden said, responding to a question about whether the U.S. would get involved militarily in response to a Chinese invasion of Taiwan. His comments came at a news conference today in Tokyo during his first trip to Asia as commander-in-chief. Biden stressed that the U.S. remains committed to the bedrock One China policy, and he played down the possibility that China will try to take Taiwan. WSJ White House reporter Andrew Restuccia is traveling with the president and says Biden's aides are already seeking to clarify his remarks.
They said that the U.S. policy on Taiwan has not changed, and they pointed to the Taiwan Relations Act, which essentially says that the U.S. can provide weapons and other means for Taiwan to defend itself. You know, of course, the president seemed to imply that the U.S. was going to become directly involved in defending Taiwan, but the White House is starting to walk that back today.
The Chinese foreign ministry criticized Biden's comments, saying Beijing has no room for compromise and concession on core concerns like Taiwan. In Taipei, the foreign ministry said it is thankful to the U.S. for its rock-solid commitment to Taiwan. President Biden and leaders from a dozen countries endorsed the new Indo-Pacific Economic Framework today in an effort to counter China's influence. It marks the Biden administration's most ambitious attempt to build economic ties with Asian nations after then-President Donald Trump pulled out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership in 2017. While the New Deal prioritizes cooperation on global issues such as supply chains, clean energy, and digital rules, it does not include plans to negotiate lower tariffs or broad steps to clear barriers to market access. Among those joining the group are Japan and South Korea, 7 of the 10 members of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, as well as India, New Zealand, and Australia. In Australia, the country's newest prime minister, Anthony Albanese, was sworn into office today. On Saturday, Albanese of the centre-left Labour Party defeated incumbent Conservative Scott Morrison, becoming Australia's first Labour leader since 2013. WSJ reporter Mike Cherney in Sydney says that while the campaign centered on domestic economic issues like inflation, the change could lead to a pivot in Australia's relationship with China, its top trading partner, and with whom relations have soured in recent years.
The one point of difference between Albanese and Morrison is that he could tone down a little bit the harsh anti-China rhetoric that Morrison was using. He could pursue a less confrontational relationship with China, but probably just on the margins and nothing too substantive there.
And semiconductor powerhouse Broadcom is in advanced talks to buy VMware, according to people familiar with the matter, setting the stage for what could be one of the year's biggest deals. VMware has a market value of $40 billion, while Broadcom's is around $222 billion. Broadcom has been on the hunt for a deal to beef up its presence in the corporate software market, and VMware has a strong position in the market for hybrid cloud, where large companies mix public cloud services with their own private networks. The annual meeting of the World Economic Forum is underway in Davos, Switzerland. For a half century, the global organization held this event in January, but this year it was delayed because of COVID-19. And as WSJ European business editor Chip Cummins reports from Davos, the weather isn't the only thing making this year's gathering feel a bit different. Hi, Chip. Welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So before we compare this event to years past, what are the themes for Davos this year, at least on paper?
Well, the themes are very similar to past gatherings, you know, the global economy. Certainly right now, we have market volatility that everyone's talking about here. We have inflation. We have rising interest rates. We have all the things that Davos meeting talks about traditionally. Overlay this time, though, with the very real, very close war in Ukraine, coloring all of those discussions.
I wonder, I mean, it does seem this year that the usual A-listers, often in Davos, the U.S. president, the leaders of major economies, captains of industry, are maybe missing from the event. Could that be a sign that all these other factors you're talking about in the world now, from war to inflation to this sort of retreat of globalization, has made Davos seem less relevant in some ways?
Well, I think there are critics of this gathering that have always said it's irrelevant. I think for the supporters of it, it is a meeting that's attracted leaders of business, leaders of industry, leaders of finance, and a place for them to get together. There are fewer people. It's much more subdued this year. There's no doubt about it. Part of that is scheduling, frankly. A lot of people plan their first of the year around Davos. But part of it is, I think, a realization that right now, the war is kind of consuming everyone's attention and time, and a lot of that needs to be done at home, not in the mountains.
Chip, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is scheduled to address Davos later today by video. Lately, he has been trying to solicit support for the eventual reconstruction of Ukraine. Could something like that possibly provide a useful agenda item for this year's attendees?
It is a good point. Zelensky has proved to be extremely good at playing to his audience. Davos is a place where you have a lot of people who can make things happen in terms of financing, for sure, and talking about that. I think also, though, there's conversations going on that involve what's happening outside of the theater of war, but because of it. Things like food inflation, food security, issues around getting grain out of Ukraine, fertilizer out of Russia in this time of crisis. So there's a number of ripple effects that have been triggered by the war, but aren't necessarily part of the conversation directly with the Ukrainians or the reconstruction thereof, or the war.
That was WSJ European business editor Chip Cummins joining us today from Davos. Chip, thanks for the update.
Thank you.
Coming up, it's been nearly 3 months since the start of the war in Ukraine. So what could the next phase of the conflict have in store? We'll look at some possible scenarios with Journal Bureau Chief at Large Stephen Fidler after the break.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
We all know by now that the first phase of Russia's war in Ukraine didn't go to plan. And now, after pulling back from Kyiv, the second phase of the war, Russia's Plan B to expand control in eastern Ukraine, is faltering as well. But that hardly means the war in Ukraine is drawing to a close. Journal Bureau Chief at Large Stephen Fidler has been gaming out five potential scenarios for the next phase of the conflict and speaking to experts about how likely each of those is to transpire. And Stephen joins us now with what he's learned. Stephen, thank you for being with us. Welcome.
My pleasure.
So let's start with two scenarios on kind of the ends of the spectrum, a collapse on the part of either side. Let's start with Russia. What would a Russian collapse in this war look like, and how probable is that?
Well, a Russian collapse could take place in sort of multiple ways, I guess, that over a variety of places. So one might see sort of fighting units refusing to go to war. They could be even sort of large-scale retreats and this kind of thing, particularly if they were under a lot of pressure, didn't see a way out, and there were a lot of casualties. One of the experts I spoke to said about the best thing you could say about the Russian army so far was that it hadn't collapsed, that it had held together given the pressure that the Ukrainians had put them under. And as new Western weapons go into the fighting and in the Ukrainians' hands, that is likely to put the Russians under more pressure. So a Russian collapse cannot be ruled out.
Neither, it seems, in your analysis, can a Ukrainian collapse entirely. Is it possible also that we might be underestimating the possibility of that for various reasons?
Well, don't forget where we were at the start of the war. I mean, everybody, all the military experts that I talked to, reckoned it was most probable that the war would go on for a few weeks and that the Ukrainians would collapse and essentially the army would melt away and it would turn into a kind of insurgency, a kind of informal battle against Russian forces who were sort of would dominate in the country. Now the people that I've spoken to think that is highly unlikely at the moment, given how effective they've proved themselves, given their tactical advantage, given their at home. Having said that, of course, they've just lost the Battle of Mariupol, and they are coming under very heavy pressure at the moment and maybe losing ground in Luhansk. But if the Russians do manage to advance there, they are sort of stretching themselves significantly. So what would happen with a Russian advance in the short term, which is possible, is that it's likely to peter out.
I mean, assuming Ukraine continues to have the momentum that it currently possesses in this conflict and maybe pushes Russian troops back, as it has done in some areas lately, how far might Ukraine go? This is the Ukrainian escalation scenario you've presented.
Yeah, well, I think that is the big question. Ukraine has been very definite. They want to go back to the 1991 borders of Ukraine. That includes the entire peninsula of Crimea and the areas in the Donbass that the Russians took control of in 2014. And that's a pretty maximalist kind of objective. It wouldn't be easy to achieve, but if the Ukrainians did manage to get the Russians on the run, they would be very tempted to continue to chase them out as far as they could. And this is where the Western support for Ukraine might start to splinter a little bit. Some of the Western supporters, particularly in Europe, might start to think, well, the war should end now rather than Ukraine shouldn't be winning it. They should be trying to end it.
Stephen, let's look now at some of the more muddied possible next phases of this war, either a quagmire, as you call it, or some form of an escalation with unpredictable and somewhat scary outcomes as a result. I mean, what factors are making those two future courses of the war more likely?
Well, a quagmire, most of the people I spoke to don't think that is likely in the short term. So although we may be in a sort of somewhat of a holding pattern as the Ukrainians advance in the north beyond Kharkiv, and as the Russians press in further in the southeast towards in Luhansk, this could be a mobile phase of the campaign, certainly 3 to 4 weeks out from now. On the question of escalation, that is something that people have speculated about since the beginning. What if Vladimir Putin becomes so desperate that he wants to scale up the force that he's delivering, that he wants to kind of frighten Ukraine or frighten the West, either by using nuclear weapons in the battlefield in Ukraine or even chemical weapons and that kind of thing. Now, that would break an enormous taboo, the taboo since 1945, that nuclear weapons aren't used in conflict. And that would bring, no doubt, a huge amount of international condemnation upon his head. It's also likely to erase some of the Western red lines that have so far governed the conflict, in which the Western and NATO forces won't go into direct engagement with Russian forces in Ukraine. So the possibility of Western conventional escalation is a real possibility if the Russians really do escalate in using sort of non-conventional weapons. Now, the question is, a rational actor would not want to put the Russia's armed forces in direct confrontation with America's armed forces, because there's only going to be one winner there. So the question is Putin a rational actor? And my conclusion is, well, I'm quoting one of the people I spoke to, if he's not rational, we don't have a rational way to stop him. There's no point in thinking rationally as a way to stop an irrational person. But he's made big mistakes, Putin, in starting this war. We don't yet know that he's an irrational leader.
That was Wall Street Journal Bureau Chief at Large, Stephen Fidler. Stephen, thank you so much for breaking down these possible next steps of the war for us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.